This is the Reading Envy Podcast, where we'll have what you're reading. Hi, I'm Scott. I'm here at the well-lit back corner of the Reading Envy Pub, where we're drinking root beer today. I've got two people here to talk to me about YA books. Carissa is 17.
Hello.
And Alex is 14.
Hi.
Hello. Well, cool. You both love to read?
We do.
You enjoy reading. What kind of books do you like to read, Carissa?
I like to read fantasy romance books.
Fantasy romance. In the same book or separate books?
Same book.
Excellent. All right. What's in the title as an example? What's a fantasy romance title of it?
What I'm going to talk about today is Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea.
Ooh, cool.
It's like supernatural romance. It's pretty cool.
Nice. All right. And Alexandra, what kind of books do you like to read?
I like to read sci-fi fantasy and horror.
Horror. All right. Well, this should be fun. Better order another round. Okay, so I said that I'd go first.
Yep.
The first book that I want to talk about is a book that kind of changed my life, not because it's like the best book ever, but because when I read it, I thought it was amazing. But I was younger than both of you. How old is a fifth grader?
11.
Let's see, 11-ish or so? 11 or 12 years old?
Yeah.
I read a book called Dolphin Island by Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
And it was a YA book. And it's about a boy named Johnny who, I can't remember why his parents were not in the picture, but he was living with his uncle at the beginning of the book, his uncle and his aunt. But he was unhappy there because he was kind of a fifth wheel. He was not really part of the family. He was just kind of out there. So one day, he's asleep and he hears something outside, some big machine or something. So he goes out there and he sees that there is a hovercraft, big truck hovercraft, which it's just like a semi truck driving on our highways, but it's a hovercraft instead. And it actually goes over land and then goes over water. And it's stopped really close to his house, which never happens. So he left the house and he found a way onto the ship. I don't know what he was thinking. But he got on there, and the thing started to move again. So he was stuck. So he decided he would hide. So he hid in some of the boxes and stuff. Anyway, this thing cruises over land, and then it goes over the water. And then he wakes up when the thing crashes. So whatever was wrong with it on land went really wrong over water. So now he's shipwrecked. Okay? And he's floating around on a box that he found or something like that. And what happens is a couple of dolphins find him and they push him to safety. They push him to a place. I can't remember if the island is called Dolphin Island. I'm not really sure. Is it? Okay. Alex has read this book. So what's cool about it is he's so far away from home that they can't send him home immediately, and he's so remote. But Dolphin Island is a place where scientists are learning how to talk to dolphins. I remember on his arm he had a big pad that he'd tap things in when he was underwater, and it would broadcast or do sounds that the dolphins would understand. And so he could talk to the dolphins that way. And he ended up being such a good swimmer and really good that he ended up staying at this island for a long time. So it was really good. Anyway, it changed my life because up till then I hadn't read anything that I liked as much as that. I always like to read, but I loved it. I absolutely loved this book. And Alex has read it, and what did you think of it?
I liked it a lot. I think you read it to me while I was younger, and I don't think we got all the way through it. And then this year I decided to read it again.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah. It's fun. Carissa loves the ocean.
I do.
Yeah. So, yeah, dolphins are cool. Dolphins are cool. Did you ever... Were you on the cruise where we went swimming with the dolphins?
I didn't go with you, but I was there, yeah.
Okay. What did you do instead?
I think we went horseback riding or something.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's not as cool.
It's not as cool.
But anyway, I had to do that because of this book. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't want to swim with those dolphins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, so that's my story. Again, I was younger than you two, but I really liked it a lot.
Did you love it because you could picture yourself as the character?
Maybe. I know that, you know, when I was swimming and stuff, you know, we spent a lot of time in Florida. And when I was swimming and stuff, I used to pretend that there was dolphins around and stuff. So I would say yes, maybe. Do you feel the same way about books?
I do, yeah. Do you? I always try to put myself in the character's position. Then it's really? Just easier to relate to it.
That's interesting, yeah.
I think I try to connect with the character, not like be in the character's shoes, but connect with the character.
Okay. Do you have mental images of what the characters look like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you are they people that you know like from movies and things, or are they not?
I think I create my own characters in my head, like what they would look like.
So do I. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to create them yourself than have someone else tell you. Because then if, like, sometimes with movies especially, they mix it up. And then you're like, no, that's totally wrong. I hate that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's how I thought with The Hunger Games the first time I saw Katniss as Jennifer Lawrence. Mm-hmm. I hated it.
Really? Did you like it now? Does it fit now or still no?
It's okay. Yeah.
You know, when I read books a lot, there's a description of what the person looks like. And unless there's something important about it, like this person is bald and he has a horn coming out of his head or something like that, you know, that would be important. Other than that, I usually completely disregard it.
Really?
Yeah. Like if it doesn't matter if the guy has red hair or brown hair or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody like Ron Weasley... That was important to his character.
Yeah.
Because he was from the Weasleys.
Right. Yeah. But if it's not, it's something that I forget right after I read it. Hmm. And you guys aren't the same way?
No.
So you picture... I attach to it.
Yeah.
Do you?
I think that I immediately create somebody in my head when I read the description.
That's interesting.
So that I have that picture all the way through the book.
Me too.
I usually get an image, and it's often like an actor or somebody that I know. Through how they act and stuff, somehow a connection is made in my head. Mm-hmm. And then whatever the description of the character was, that's the person for the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Can't be helped. Yeah, that's what happens to me anyway. So, cool. So what have you got first, Carissa?
I have Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea.
Ooh.
And it's by April Genevieve Tuhalki. And it's about this girl. She's about 16. And her name is Violet. And her parents are artists, like painters, and they're in Europe painting. And so it's just her and her older brother, Luke, in this big, massive mansion right next to a cliff by the sea, in somewhere in Oregon, I think. And it's very dreary there, you know, always stormy and cloudy and gray. And so they have this house that has a little guest house on the other side of the lot. And it's for lease because they don't have anybody else to, you know, live there. And so this boy named River West comes in and moves in. And he's very mysterious and doesn't really like give himself away, you know, doesn't disclose any information about himself. And so they immediately, Violet, Luke, and River immediately become friends. And then they go everywhere around town together. And then all these mysterious things keep happening. Like one thing, they're in the middle of eating breakfast at a diner, looking over through the windows into a city park. And one of the town's homeless people commits suicide in front of them. And then River is smiling. And then they all run off, but Violet asks him about it later, and he declines it. He says he doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very interesting book. I really liked it because it was always leaving you wondering if it was River or if it was something else.
So if it was River causing, like, that person to commit suicide?
Yeah, causing all these strange things to happen.
Something else around him or something, huh?
Like a different force that he has or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout the book, you learn that, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but throughout the book, you learn that River actually does have some kind of supernatural force, and he's actually using it on Violet. And it's
using it on Violet for what? Or is that too much?
Well, I don't want to give spoilers.
Yeah, don't give it all away. But
yeah, but he uses it against her will, and she doesn't know it. But he uses it to make her like him, like not question him at all.
I see.
And so there's this one quote that I really, really liked. It's, "If I ever disappear, please tell Violet that I ran. Oh, please tell people that I ran after the devil, trying to get my soul back." And Violet said that to one of her friends, and she was referring to River, because she's always running after him, wondering what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just really liked the book.
Well, that's neat. So the characters are all about the same age, you say?
Yeah, they're about 17, 18, 19.
Okay. So the books that you read mostly, the ones that you identify with most, have characters that are your age?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever read books with characters that are adults?
I do, yeah, but I don't really relate to them as well. I kind of side off from them.
That's cool. So that does sound like a pretty cool book. So it's some kind of a supernatural force, huh?
Yeah.
Does the house itself have anything to do with it?
Well, the house itself, her grandma just passed away. And so her house is, they feel like it's somehow haunted by her spirit.
Oh.
So it's interesting because then things happen in the house and they're confused about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. And you mentioned Europe, too. Are they from Europe? This house is in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
but they're from Europe. Is that right?
They went to Europe
to paint. They're from Oregon,
though. Yeah.
Oh, they're from Oregon. So the house is in Europe.
No, the house is in Oregon. Okay. The parents are in Europe.
The parents left, and they're off painting in Europe.
Yes.
And the kids are in Oregon.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys find it interesting that in... You know, well, in the book that I describe and in the book that you describe, the parents are not existent.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to happen a lot.
It does. Yeah,
I think that makes that's like a trait for lots of good stories.
Is it?
Parents being gone or having conflict with parents.
Why do you think that it's important that they're gone in the books?
I don't think it's important. I just think it creates like a better connection with like teenage readers. Because sometimes we don't like our parents.
I think that it makes it easier to have conflict or freedom, and they mess it up.
Yeah,
like they don't have so much supervision, so they're they do things, and then they're like, "Oh, crap. I shouldn't have done that."
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, as I sit here and think about it, that if the parents were existent in most of the books, you would have a lot of the same issues being talked about in almost every book you read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
You know, and maybe that opens it up to remove that source of conflict or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, cool. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. That is neat.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alex, does your book have non-existent parents?
No, it has one parent.
Uh-huh.
But there's no dad. Mm-hmm. So there's still conflict with parents.
Okay.
But my book is called Mr. Monster by Dan Wells, and it's the second book in the John Cleaver trilogy. So in the first book, it starts off with John Cleaver, and you find out he's a sociopath, which means he doesn't feel things like normal people do, you know? So he is obsessed with serial killers and death. And he lives in Clayton County, which is a very small town in somewhere in America. Mm-hmm. Doesn't specify where. And starts with a guy getting killed behind a laundromat. And he goes to the crime scene and he starts... like investigating, and he investigates through that whole book, and his mother is always worried about him. She sets him rules to try to not be a sociopath.
So she knows he's a sociopath. She knows everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's worried that he's going to do something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then he, at the end of that book, he finds out that one of his neighbors is a demon, which the demon has been alive for over 1,000 years. And he regenerates by killing people and taking their body parts. So,
this yeah. Okay, this demon regenerates by killing people.
Yes.
And taking a body part.
Yes, so he, if his heart starts to give out, then he kills a person and takes out his own heart and puts the other person's heart in.
Ah, I see.
Which is immediately, yeah.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
That is creepy.
So, throughout the book, John figures out who it is, and he ends up killing the demon. And his mom finds out because she is in the middle of it, and the demon was about to kill her. Oh. Yeah.
So, is the fact that he's a sociopath have anything to do with him finding the demon?
Yes, because he is obsessed with the fact of, like, serial killers and investigating serial killers and just death, pretty much. He wants to kill people himself,
mm-hmm.
but he knows he can't, so he kills a demon.
Wow. And yeah. You said this is book two, and yep. the first book is called I Am Not a Serial
yes,
Killer,
the right? first book I just described is I Am Not a Serial Killer.
Uh-huh.
And then my favorite book of the trilogy is Mr. Monster, which is the second one,
mm-hmm.
which is a year after he kills the demon. There are kidnappings, and he has set more rules for himself and gone stricter. And he has a girlfriend that he constantly has dreams about killing her because he loves the connection he feels when he kills a person. Like, if you have a knife and you step forward, then that person immediately steps back, usually.
Uh-huh.
And he loves that connection and that feeling. And he got that when he killed Crowley, the demon.
Which was the demon in yes. the first book. Okay.
And so he constantly has dreams about killing his girlfriend. But he goes and sets fires by himself in, like, forbidden alleys and stuff so people can't find him as a way of trying to set out, like, those feelings into, like, the fire.
So he's fighting his feelings of
yeah.
wanting to kill his girlfriend,
yeah.
which is good.
That's very good.
I mean,
good.
It seems very, very dark.
It is dark.
Uh-huh.
It is, but it is so good.
I mean, okay, when you say so good, I mean, is it humorous in any way? Is it... You know, it just seems really dark to me.
It is humorous sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
How John, like, thinks is very funny usually.
Uh-huh.
But then there's some points which is very serious,
mm-hmm.
which consumes most of the book. Very serious.
So most of the book is serious.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I've read the first one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this is by Dan Wells, who...
Mm-hmm.
Who you got to meet the last convention we went to.
Yeah, I did get to meet him.
Yeah, and he's actually, he completed that trilogy,
mm-hmm.
and he's writing a second trilogy.
Yep.
Yep, I can't remember what the first book is called, but it's just ready to come out now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, interesting. So
yep.
So both of you have got a book about... There, that has to do with death.
Yes. Teenagers love death.
Teenagers love death. Should that frighten us old people?
No.
No, not at all, no.
Just don't think about it.
Just don't think about it. All right.
We fight the feelings, don't worry.
we set fires in forbidden alleyways.
That's nice. Cool. Well, I can't think of any other questions I have about that book.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy Dan Wells quite a bit. He's got a podcast called Writing Excuses. Have you guys heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have anyways.
He and Brandon Sanderson, who wrote a really good YA series called Alcatraz.
Oh, I love those books. Alcatraz yeah. versus the Evil Librarians.
Yeah, Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarian is the first one. Yeah. Probably a little bit younger than you'd be interested mm-hmm. in, Carissa.
Yeah, I read that a while ago, though.
Yeah, a couple years at least. Yeah. And let's see. So Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, a guy named Howard Taylor who makes a living doing comics online.
Called Schlock the Mercenary?
Schlock Mercenary, that's mm-hmm. right. And then Mary Robinette Cole is the other person on that podcast who, and she writes Regency. Do you guys know what Regency is?
No.
Have you ever heard of Jane Austen?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah. She writes sort of a Jane Austen fantasy series right now, but you know, yeah. she comes out with a lot of other things too. But she's also a puppeteer. So
I got to see one of her puppet shows.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
It was cool. But anyway, yeah, Dan Wells, very interesting guy. But yeah, looks like I need to read those other two.
Yeah, I love the way he centers in on a character because he learns all about the mental disorder of sociopathy, and he just figures everything out about it, and then he writes it. So he's not one-sided. He's writing from, you know, what that character feels instead of what people think about the character.
Okay, so do you feel in reading that you're actually learning something about sociopathy? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because he just describes it really well
mm-hmm.
over the John Cleaver and how John Cleaver acts and reacts with other people.
Cool. Well, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my second book is also about death. It's a book that I read and as an adult, obviously, because it wasn't even out when I was a kid. And it is, I just absolutely love the book. It's called The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. Have you, either of you ever heard of The Jungle Book?
Yes.
Yeah, probably yeah. the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mowgli. Mm-hmm. Mowgli. So, in the same way that Mowgli was raised by jungle animals...
Mm-hmm.
The Graveyard Book is about a boy who is raised by a graveyard, people that are in a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Neil Gaiman is so good. I'm just going to read a little bit of it, but of chapter one. And chapter one, by far, is the most grisly chapter there is. It starts off, "There was a hand in the darkness, and it held a knife. The knife had a handle of polished black bone, and a blade finer and sharper than any razor. If it sliced you, you might not even know you had been cut, not immediately. The knife had done almost everything that it was brought to the house to do, and both the blade and the handle were wet. The street door was still open just a little where the knife and the man who held it had slipped in, and wisps of nighttime mist slithered and twined into the house through the open door." Spooky.
I don't think so, because I've read it before.
Yeah. Because you know what comes now, right?
Yeah.
So in that first chapter, this toddler who's in a crib, actually, manages to climb out of the crib and get out of the house. So that all happens in chapter one. And then after chapter one, it becomes really... I mean, not that chapter one's not enjoyable, but from then on, it's really enjoyable. This kid just, you know, I have visions of this kid learning his alphabet from the gravestones. He has ghosts of a couple whose last name is Owens, but they don't know what his name is, so they call him Nobody. And so his name is Nobody Owens, or Bod, for short.
Yeah.
And the graveyard protects the boy. So when this killer realizes that this boy got away, he follows the boy down the lane, but the boy has wandered into the graveyard, and the killer can't go in there to get him because there's a power to the graveyard too. And there's a mysterious guy. Everybody in the graveyard can't leave the graveyard, you know, the ghosts and things, but there's one person who goes and gets food and stuff for this boy. And who that person is an interesting revelation in the book, too.
Yeah.
Like, how can he do that and no one else can? Anyway, I'm going to read this again in October because I just love it. And I keep loving it. And the audiobook is absolutely great.
Yeah.
And I just found out today that a full cast audiobook is coming out. Like an audio drama version of it.
That's going to be cool.
Should be good.
That'd be cool.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit to find out that this was going to be a movie too, but I don't know.
I don't think I'd want to watch the movie.
Really?
Because I think it'd ruin the book for me. Really?
Do you? Does that happen a lot?
Yeah.
Because of the characters that you see, or because of why?
Mostly because I like it in my head more than I like to see it on the movie screen.
Because someone else depicts it instead of you.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have both read The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah.
That's coming out as a movie.
Well, it already came
out.
Excited or not excited? I mean, did you go see it?
Yeah, we saw it together.
Okay.
I particularly... I know that the hype for it made me not want to see it, but then I saw it, and I thought it was the best book to movie
I've ever seen. It was surprisingly good.
Really?
They kept a lot of the best quotes from the book in it.
I think that's why I liked it. It wasn't the characters, it was that they kept it super, super true to the book.
Yeah, they kept a lot of the lines that John Green put in the book in the movie, which made it phenomenal, because John Green is a really good writer.
That's one of my favorite books, just because it's the writing itself is so, I don't know, beautiful in a way.
Yeah.
It's just really, really well written.
Yeah, how he puts things in metaphors is absolutely amazing. It's
nice.
It makes me want to talk really, really advanced because his characters are like brilliant.
Really?
Yeah.
He has the best characters. And in every book he writes a different character with different problems, with a total different personality and total different look on life, which is...
But he does it so realistically.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not a book, it's like life.
Yeah.
It's like you're living it.
It's like you're watching how a person lives their own life.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys have convinced me. If I was going to read one John Green book, what would it be?
Let's see. My favorite is Paper Towns by John Green.
Paper Towns?
Yeah.
Okay.
How about you? Fault in Our Stars is the only John Green book I've read.
Okay.
I've read all the John Green books.
I've read it three times, so...
Well,
all right. I'll put Paper Towns on my list.
Yeah. I have it in my bookshelf, so...
Okay. Luckily, I live with you, so... borrow it. What luck.
I'm currently reading a John Green book, too.
Nice. Which one?
An Abundance of Catherines. It's my last John Green book.
An Abundance of Catherines.
Yes.
That sounds like a cloning book.
Not so much. Yeah. I think John Green is the only romance type of books that I read. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The only ones that I enjoy anyways.
Okay. Is there any kind of a fantasy element in his books, or is he just pretty much straight, like a romance?
Yeah, he's realistic. There's no fairies or anything. Okay. It's just full realistic.
Cool. Okay. Paper Towns it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hardly gave the Graveyard book justice, but if anybody out there has not read the Graveyard book, by all means, read it.
Go read it now.
Because it's awesome.
Wait, listen to the end of this podcast, then go read it.
All right. Carissa, what else did you bring?
I have The Book Thief.
The Book Thief.
By Marcus Zusak.
Nice.
And it is my favorite book of all time.
Is it really?
It is. I've read it twice now.
Oh, cool.
I plan to read it seven more times after that. But I read it, the first time I read it was with my creative writing class at school. And I was very reluctant to read it because, you look at it and it's massive and the words are tiny. But it turned out to be just incredibly written and I'm just obsessed with it.
Okay, so quick synopsis. What is it about?
It's about a girl. She's about 12. Her name's Liesl Memminger, and she is on her way on a train to a foster family because her mother cannot afford to raise her children. And on the way to the foster family, her brother passes away, and she finds... So they go and bury her brother on the side of the train tracks. And she finds this book called The Gravedigger's Handbook. And she cannot read it because she doesn't know how to read. So when she arrives at the Foster house, she does not want to meet or get out of the car. She doesn't want to meet her foster family. And this is in Germany. And the street that the house is on is called Himmel Street. And Himmel in German is heaven, which is very ironic because the street is not heavenly. And so throughout a couple years, this story goes on. And it's right before World War II. And so Hitler's in power. And, you know, everybody in Germany, all the girls and the boys have to go to the Hitler youth camps. And so her father is, his name's Hans, and he teaches her how to read the Gravedigger's Handbook, and then teaches her how to write. And throughout the book, another character comes in, and his name is Max. And he's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches her a lot about who she is. And he teaches her how to accept some things that she doesn't really want to accept. And then she's really, really angry with him at the end of the book because he has to leave. But it's just throughout World War II that this book goes on. And she is a German girl who doesn't really want to be a German girl. And so I think that's why I like it so much. I don't know. It's kind of rebellious, but it's really, really well written.
All right. And Max, I have read this book. Max is Jewish,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think you mentioned that, but yeah, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So he is in hiding the whole time. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that I liked most about the book, I did really like it. You know, and the Holocaust is always difficult to read about. It's really heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
but the narrator of this book makes it unique. Who's the narrator of it?
The narrator is Death.
Death himself, huh?
Yep. The whole book is written through Death's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a quote here as well from Death. And throughout the book, they have these little, what would you call them? Little breaks in the reading
mm-hmm.
that are little, like, facts and things that Death would say. And here's a couple of them. Here is a small fact. You are going to die. Reaction to the aforementioned fact. Does this worry you? I urge you, don't be afraid. I'm nothing if not fair.
Is Death fair?
Yeah, I think he's fair.
I think he's fair.
All right.
You have, like, a certain time, and when your time comes up, he'll take you.
That's all right with you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Interesting. Alex, have you read The Book Thief? I don't think you have.
I have read, like, the first few chapters.
Okay.
But not all of it, which I need to do.
Yeah. Is that on your list?
Yeah, it actually is.
Cool. So, yeah, Liesel was a very strong character, too. I liked her quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're right, Max changed her quite a bit, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
What about the boy that she used to hang out with?
Rudy.
Rudy, yeah. That was an interesting relationship, too. They ended up, you know, the word... The book thief, in the title, she would start to steal books,
mm-hmm.
right? Kind of throughout the book, she was stealing things, just so that she'd have a book collection. Or why do you think she did that, though?
I think that, well, there's one part in the book where they're actually taking all of the books and burning them
mm-hmm.
in the town. And she pulls a book out of the fire or the ashes when everybody has dispersed and there's no one around. And there's a quote that says, Liesel herself was made of darkness. And I think that that's a really, really good quote, just because she really was in a dark time. I mean, during the war, and she's got somebody hidden and her parents aren't really, well, her real parents are nowhere, and she's got this question around her the whole entire book of if her mom's coming back for her. And I think she starts to steal books just because she feels like she needs to know other things outside of, you know, I feel like with her reading books, she can escape some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why she does it. It's because she likes to escape.
That's cool. That is really nifty. Do you read to escape?
I do, yeah.
Do you? So you can identify with that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here and I look at you and you've brought those books in hard copy, you know, hard cover and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Do you prefer that to ebooks?
I do. I don't like ebooks.
Really?
I don't know why. I like, even if the book is really good, I find that I can't finish it if it's on ebook.
Yeah.
No,
just because I feel like I can't focus.
Yeah. That's why I never finished The Book Thief, because I had it on ebook and I wanted it in hardcover. Mm-hmm. I just can't do ebooks.
Neither can I.
I find that really interesting. I find that great, too. Because I found that in myself, too. When ebooks started to become really prevalent, I kind of felt myself wanting to switch everything to ebook so that I could have everything with me all the time. But I've gotten to a point where I feel like there's really not a lot of worth in that to me. I would much rather have a hard copy of the book, which surprises me. Kind of coming out the other end of that.
Yeah, I like feeling it in my hands.
Mm-hmm. And seeing the words on the page,
And do you
just like flipping
bookshelves?
The page. And I don't like just swiping. I don't like doing that. I just like turning the page and like the smell of a new book and everything. It's just like the experience of having a book.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm trying to think of something else to say about The Book Thief, which I loved. Now, we saw the movie together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I felt like the movie really missed.
I think so, too.
It was pretty good, but I think the whole death aspect was missed.
I think it was missing, too.
Yeah. When I first watched the movie, death only appeared, like, 3 times. At the beginning, in the middle for, like, 2 seconds, and at the end.
Yeah.
Which I don't think wasn't as much.
Yeah. I think that was a big flaw.
I think
they should have made death the most important character.
Yeah, I think that's why the book was so good, is that because it was such a different perspective.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think that death would have an opinion on the war, you know?
Yeah.
But then he does in the book, and I just think it's brilliant.
I think death is probably really the biggest part of war.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't he be in a book about the war?
He'd be very busy, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. I like that book very much, too.
Yeah, I like the author. I read a book from Marcus Duzek just during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was it called?
It was called I Am the Messenger.
Oh, yeah. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Cool. I've started that, but I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, me neither.
We were going to all read it kind of together, but I...
Yep. It was supposed to be in June.
My summer got hijacked.
Mine, too.
It's August.
And all of a sudden, it's August, right?
Yep.
All right, Alex, what have you got for us last?
Okay, my third book is called The Fifth Wave.
The Fifth Wave.
By Rick Yancey. And this book is post-apocalyptic. So it is about a young girl named Cassie Sullivan. I think she's, I guess, not that young. She's probably around 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts right after... The war with the aliens has ended. So the aliens infested the world slowly by putting themselves into people and taking over people of, like, high priority, like governors and presidents. And they slowly took that over. And at the end, they just ended up trying to rid people from the earth so that they could take it over. So it follows a girl named Cassie Sullivan who just tries to fight against all the aliens. And at first she was living with her dad, her brother, and her. So her brother gets taken away to a camp to learn to fight about aliens. And her dad gets killed. And so she is just living in a tent by herself at the beginning of the book. And throughout the book, she's trying to get to her brother and get him away from the camp to be with her. And then it goes to her brother's perspective, which is during the camp and fighting, and they get chips in their necks to find to help them fight against the aliens. But at the end, they figure out that the camp is run by the aliens, and he ends up finding one of Cassie's old friends, and he fights against the war camp, and they end up getting out and meeting Cassie as she's trying to get in. And then they have to fight throughout the camp to get out. And there's a bit of romance in that book, too. It's pretty fast part, though. But it's super good. It's more science fiction, as you can tell with the aliens.
Yeah.
I have a quote from this book. It's How do you rid the Earth of humans? You rid the humans of their humanity.
And that's what the aliens are trying to do.
Yeah.
Wow. So Cassie joins this fight, you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. And when you say fighting, is it like armies fighting each other, or is it like sneaking around trying to shoot alien type of stuff?
Well, for her, she's just trying to get to her brother, so she fights any aliens that try to come and kill her.
So these aliens are taking over people? Does she spend the whole time trying to figure out who's who? Like, when she sees people on the street, is she worried that they're aliens all the time?
Sometimes.
Or is there something obvious about a person that's an alien?
I can't remember what was obvious. I think it was their eyes. Don't you think?
I think I remember that.
Yeah, I think it was their eyes. If you saw their eyes, they were like bright blue or bright green.
Green, I think.
Yeah. It's been a year since I read this book.
I read it last summer.
Yeah, me too. And so aliens are going hovercrafts over like forests trying to find people. And the camp is run by aliens, but how the aliens got in is when, during a year, when all women had babies, they'd go in, take out the baby's soul, and put their souls in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they didn't, you know.
Wow, so that's pretty dismal stuff, too.
Yeah.
Did the book end in a happy place or a sad place?
Not really. It ended in kind of like a cliffhanger when they're in a Jeep getting out of the camp, and there's aliens running behind them, and
okay, so I haven't seen book two of that.
Coming out. It's going to be part of a trilogy. But there's nothing that's been told. Like, we don't know the title or when it's coming out yet.
So that's been a long time. Is that frustrating?
Kind of, but it's okay.
I'm gonna have to reread it. I don't really remember all the details.
I need to reread it too.
Yeah, there's a lot of series and stuff that I read, and sometimes I'm like, oh man. Do you guys like a series, or do you like a single book?
I like single books.
Yeah?
I have to say I do too. I guess it depends on the book, because some books you just like so much that you wish that the end would be the end, and then they continue, and you're like, I just don't want to read this, because it ended how I wanted it to end.
When I first read the John Cleaver trilogy, I thought I Am Not a Serial Killer was going to be the first and last one.
Yeah.
But then I read Mr. Monster, and I loved it, so that was kind of like mixed feelings, because I wanted it to just end there, but...
So do you like that Dan Wells is doing another trilogy with the same character?
I was not too excited when I figured out what it was going to be about, you know? Like him pairing up with the detectives that know about the demons, which that doesn't really appeal to me as much. But I think John Cleaver's still going to be the same character and act like he does, even with all these people around him.
And that's interesting enough to you to give it a shot?
Yeah, he read the first chapter, which kind of made me like it more, because it was more just about John, not about the other people in it.
Right. Yeah, so I'm not sure what's taken so long on the fifth wave, or why it's taken so long for the sequel to come out. But yeah, sometimes there are series where the next book is like years away.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I kind of don't want another book to the fifth wave. I think it was kind of a good ending, even though it was a cliffhanger.
Uh-huh.
I think it solved everything, even though there's still going to be aliens and the end of the world.
Okay.
It makes you wonder if the sequel is so many years after, if it was like an afterthought.
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe I can make a sequel to this, so I'm going to write a book now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So in every book that we talked about, parents were missing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And in every book that we talked about, there was a lot of death and mayhem.
Yes.
Yeah. Except for probably Dolphin Island.
Well.
Dolphin Island, the parents were missing, but there wasn't a lot of death and mayhem.
Dolphins die.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so sad.
It is. It's even sadder than the people, isn't it?
It is. There's a time.
Well, cool. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Cool. I just have a two questions that are kind of off the wall.
Okay.
One of them, do you prefer big books or short books?
Well, I don't really have a preference. If it's a good book, then I'm going to read it.
Okay. That's a good answer. Yeah.
I think I like big books.
Do you?
Just because sometimes you can't fit enough into a small book, and you're like, okay, there has to be a second one to this because that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So you like how much fits in a big book. And you, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can understand that. You know, stories are satisfying at a certain length, you know?
I think I like 300. Mm-hmm. If the shortest I like is 300.
Yeah, really? I would agree. Yeah.
300.
Interesting.
Because then you feel you at least spent your time and it was well spent when you finish it.
Really?
If they don't tell the whole story, then I'm obviously not going to read it. Cool. If people say it's not good.
Yeah, I just read a book called If I Stay, which is going to be a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty disappointed in it. But I feel like it was because it was so short. Like, I felt like there wasn't enough in it.
It was just so fast.
Yeah, it was like 150 or 200 pages or something.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if a book is 150 and it's not a short story, I feel like it's not going to complete what it needs to complete.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you read short stories that you like?
Yeah, I've read a lot of short stories that I love.
You as well?
Yeah,
me as well. If someone like Marcus Zusak published a book of short stories,
would you be interested in that? Yeah.
Okay, I was just curious. And then lastly, do you like long chapters or short chapters? Like, you know, I picture that, like, do you feel like, you know, when you're about to go to sleep and you're like, oh, these chapters are short, I'm going to read one more? Or do you like to finish a long chapter say victory?
I feel like finishing a long chapter is more satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So you like long chapters.
Because you're like, victory, I did it. I'm going to read another one.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes it depends on the book, because... Like, choppy chapters, short chapters, then really long chapters fits well with the...
Yeah. Well, in The Book Thief, there's a lot of really short ones, and then a lot of long ones, too.
Long ones.
I think choppy chapters have their purpose.
I think so, too.
Somebody like Shannon Hale, she writes really long chapters. Have you guys ever read Shannon Hale?
Well, I used to, but I don't really remember any of her books. I read them when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
What does she write?
The Goose Girl was kind of a famous one.
Kind of like Princessy.
Princess Academy.
The Princess Academy, Princessy. Yeah. They were my favorite books when I was a kid. And now everyone in my school is reading them. And I'm just like, I read those when I was in elementary school.
And you were onward to death and mayhem.
Yep. Let's do this. Starts with the graveyard book.
Pretty sure that's going to be the title of this podcast. Death and Mayhem.
Death and Mayhem
and No Parents.
Yeah.
No Parents Allowed. All right. Well, thanks again for being on here. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. See you later, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can find us at readingenvy.com.